The House will come to order. Please stand for the Pledge of Allegiance. Good morning, colleagues, guests. Flag salute this morning will be led by Representative Val Hoyle.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Val, thank you.
Please be seated. Colleagues, we have the pleasure of having a fine young group with us this morning, and our opening ceremony will be presented by MegaMath out of Tuolumne Middle School under the direction of Dave Witcher from Tigard, and they are guests this morning of Representative Margaret Doherty. So welcome to our students and staff. Thanks for being here with us. We get nervous when we see drums coming on the floor. Glad to have you here.
When a line goes up from left to right, that line has a positive slope. When a line goes down from left to right, that line has a negative slope. When a line is parallel to the x-axis, that line doesn't have any slope. When a line is parallel to the y-axis, that line doesn't have any slope. For slope, and I don't know why, but M represents the slope. It is also the coefficient of X, so it goes just left of the X. It's the change in Y over the change in X, sometimes called rise over run. You can find these values using any two points located on the same line. So it doesn't change and is always written last. The B represents the y-intercept, which is where the y-axis is crossed. The ordered pair that represents this point always has an x value of 0. B is a constant, so it doesn't change and is always written last.
Very nicely done. Thank you for joining with us. Love to see your enthusiasm and unique training style for math skills. Thank you so much. Courtesies, Representative Doherty.
Th-
Thank you much for it, Mr. Speaker. I would like to introduce you and again congratulate the kids from Tualatin Middle School in Tigard. And the Mega Math is a great program that they have in Tigard Tualatin School District. They're great kids. They know their math. And as we say in Tualatin, TTSD rocks.
TTSD rocks. Thank you, Representative. Further courtesies, Representative Nathanson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to recognize the visitors up here from Bertha Holt Elementary School in Eugene. The school is named after Bertha Holt, the founder of Holt International Adoption Agency. The school's program is designed to embody her legacy of care for children from all backgrounds and abilities. Their school mission statement is taken from Bertha Holt's own words, "All children are beautiful when they are loved." Their school includes a well-stocked library available to students and families before and after school and during recess, as well as during school, a large computer lab, and 110 mobile computers for access to computer-assisted learning. Students are recognized for being respectful, kind, responsible, and safe with a thumbs-up reward award. So here's a thumbs-up for these kids. Welcome, Holt Elementary.
Thank you, Representative, and welcome to our students from Eugene. Thanks for visiting your capital today. Further courtesies, Representative Comp.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would just like to say a thank you to our representative from Tigard. As a principal, whenever I felt like I was overwhelmed, things were moving too fast, and I just couldn't keep up, and just the day was too busy. I could go to a band class, I could go to a choir class, and if you say, just like this, if you have 5 minutes watching and learning from what the children are learning, it gives us such spirit to our souls, and it does mine, and you just saw why I'm a little bit a freak, passionate geek about education. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Further courtesies, Representative Cowan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I'd like to extend courtesies this morning to the Association of Oregon County's administrative staff. They're here today for an orientation, and they're joining us now in the North Gallery. The group includes Kenneth Crick, Todd Harker, Jennifer Mendenhall, and Jan Schindel. These are the folks who answer the phones, make the appointments, hand out parking passes, pay the bills, and make things work at AOC. They're the individuals who make it happen. Welcome to your capital.
Thank you, Representative, and welcome to our visitors in the upper balcony. Further courtesies, Representative Hicks.
Seated in the upper south gallery is Derek Smith and other representatives of Clean Energy Works Oregon. In just 2 years, Clean Energy Works Oregon has remodeled 1,200 homes for energy efficiency, created 130 direct construction jobs, and brought $15 million in revenue to small businesses. They'll be in the gallery today, and I encourage everyone to go and meet them.
Thank you, Representative. Welcome to our visitors upstairs over on this side of the building. Further courtesies, Representative Boone.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, somewhere in the building there are Seaside Chamber of Commerce members. I've seen one so far, and I don't know if there are any other in the galleries now, but welcome to the Capitol and have a great day.
Thank you, Representative. Further courtesies? Seeing none, clerk will open the voting system to determine the presence of a quorum. Representative Berger, Representative Kenny Geyer. Quorum is present. Messages from the governor, messages from the Senate.
Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the President to inform you the Senate has passed House Bills 4011, 4035, 4043, 4047, 4050, 4092, and 4146.
First reading, memorials and resolutions, standing committee reports. The committee report file has been distributed. Special committee reports, special orders of business. Clerk will please read the resolution.
SCR 202 in memoriam Mark O. Hatfield, 1922 to 2011.
Question now arises upon final reading and adoption of SCR 202. Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, for this honor. And I, this may surprise some, but I also want to thank President Courtney for bringing this concurrent resolution, number 202. You can't ignore the string of victories. He's unbeaten. Mark Hatfield never lost an election. And he started right here, and he went over there, and he went to the Secretary of State's office, and you've heard all of this. He was the youngest governor ever elected, 36 years old. So some of you goobers, gubernatorial candidates, you probably better get going. And then five more elections to the United States Senate. Never beaten. But that's not what I want to talk about. Because I think the biggest political winner in the state of Oregon should be remembered for something else. He should be remembered for what he did for us. He should be remembered for who he was. And he should be remembered for how he treated us, Oregonians. There's a lot of biographies, there's a lot of awards, there's a lot of buildings named after him. Take the time sometime to walk across to Willamette University. See that library. You may hear a little more about this from my co-carrier. Take a look at The Greatest Generation by Tom Brokaw, and you'll see references to the senator, a young, very proud patriot, a very loyal veteran, who, because of his experiences at Hiroshima, developed into a very fierce warrior for peace. This great man could be also self-deprecating and pretty funny. And one story came to my mind today. Some of you may have been at a breakfast honoring him just before he retired from the United States Senate. And he started telling stories on himself, very unsenatorial. And he told a story about grudgingly admitting that his hearing was going away. He didn't want to get hearing aids. And one day he was invited to a garden party in Washington, D.C., and his wife was out of town, so he took his youngest daughter. My youngest daughter's here today. And he wanted a clever way to ask this couple that he was talking to ask where they were from and what their background was. So he saw their children playing, and he said, "Those are beautiful children. Do they get to visit their grandparents?" Very clever, you know, political ploy to get the answer. And the mom answered, "No, they're from the Middle East." And he said, "Well, that must be very hard to visit them." Horror came over the faces of the parents. And that's when the senator's daughter kicked him in the shins, pulled him out of the party, and said, "Dad," she said, "they're deceased. They're not from the Middle East." And he admitted that the next week he was fitted for hearing aids. He played on a national stage on our behalf. President Nixon had the brilliant decision-making power to pass over the senator at the last moment and choose Spiro Agnew for his presidential running mate. So think about that for a second. The youngest member of the Hatfield staff at the time in the 70s was a guy named Rick Rall, fresh out of Lewis and Clark College, and he talked the senator into actually trying an economic boycott against another country, which usually is not very successful, but it was against Idi Amin, the genocidal crazy dictator of Uganda, who was totally propped up by one cash crop, coffee. He talked the senator into it, the boycott went into effect, it worked, and Amin fell. But the national stage, there are many more stories, but the national stage is probably not as important to us today as Oregon, because he always came back to Oregon. The minimum was once a month, the entire 30 years he was in the Senate. And I was reminded, talking to different colleagues this week, about stories I'd never heard, but great stories from every corner of the state that he loved. Stories from the representative from Aloha, stories from the representative from far eastern Oregon, and a story, or at least a reference, to the representative from West Salem. I hope you'll hear some of those too as the debate, or at least the discussion, goes on. There were some magnificent tributes, including one in this chamber after we lost the senator in August 7th of last year, but none better than the two from his sons. Sons who had been in the public eye their entire life, had given up tons of time with their dad. But if you were here at either one of those services, you heard the great reverence and deep love of two sons. We're lucky to still have the senator's widow, Antoinette, living with us here in Oregon. She'd prefer to be called Mother H. What a great treasure, what a great partner. And I know that they were still writing little notes to each other in their 80s, like they were school lovebirds. It was very endearing. So at this point, I just want to be sure that the family, Mother H and Elizabeth and Marco, Teresa and Visco, know that a grateful state honors their husband and father today. During one of those eulogies, I guess, Sue Hildick, formerly with the senator's staff and now with the chalkboard project, paused for a minute in this chamber. Mr. Speaker, you were here. Chamber was full. Our chief clerk and their staff did a wonderful job that day of welcoming everyone. She paused for a minute and she said, I would like all the interns, volunteers, and staff people over this last 40-plus years career with Senator Hatfield to stand. And it felt to me like half the place stood up. It's a great legacy. On your desk is a really well-written essay by a friend of mine, Jack Robertson, who's the founder of the Northwest Hydrogen Alliance. Now, that'll be the last hydrogen reference today, but it's beautifully written, and I hope you read it. This singular leader, somebody once wrote, the senator from Central Casting, was a very impressive person to see, but he leaves our state with an imprint of a very humble servant leader. And Mr. Speaker, I look forward to further discussion on this resolution.
Thank you much, Representative. Co-Carrier Reed.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It's hard to follow the carrier from the Christmas tree district, and equally hard to think about what to add to this discussion, things that you don't already know about this giant of an Oregonian. And if you told me even recently that I'd have some role in honoring him, I probably wouldn't have believed it. I didn't have the privilege of knowing the senator, but as a fellow Willamette Bearcat, I feel a certain tie to him, and as we all do, I'm sure. So I want to try to say a few words, and because of the eloquence of the carrier from the Christmas Tree District, I want to try to confine what I say to his association with our alma mater. When I came to Oregon, it was, as most of you know, to go to college across the street, and it didn't take very long before I noticed a bit of a pattern. There's a Mark Hatfield room, there's a Mark and Antoinette Hatfield fountain, there's a Mark Hatfield library, and of course I knew something about him. It did cause me to wonder why there weren't more buildings named for Mark Hatfield at Willamette, but that's another story. And I think it caused all of us at Willamette to want to know more about who this man was and what his impact was and how he came to Willamette and what he did since. He came to Willamette too as a student and started his association with this building at that time. He was a tour guide as a freshman at Willamette and would come over here frequently. He joined this body sitting in the representative from Corvallis' desk, as we can all look at those plaques and see the history of who came before us. And when Pearl Harbor happened, He sped up his education at Willamette in order to join the Navy and served our country in that important role. You already heard about the impact that experience had on him and how it stuck with him through the rest of his career, becoming, as the carrier said, a warrior for peace. He went off to Stanford and came back to Willamette, serving as a political science professor and dean of students while he was in the legislature. And you know the rest of his illustrious career as Secretary of State, as governor, and as a senator. I'm sure that there are others who are going to have very compelling stories about their interaction with him in those roles. But he came back to Willamette again at the conclusion of his elected career and continued to teach. I think that's one of his big legacies, always teaching in whatever role he stood in. And Mr. Speaker, we're not done honoring him. This is a very worthy honor today, but there are other honors to come, and I think this legislature will have a role in deciding an appropriate way. The carrier may have more to say about that. There are lots of ways to sum the senator up and his impact, but one that he selected for himself is visible to anyone who goes across the street. Outside the Mark Hatfield Library, there's a clock tower. It's four-sided, and on each side, there are quotes that he selected. So I just want to read those to you. One side says, "Education brings national security." Another side says, "Dogma threatens liberty." The third one, "Education finds fulfillment in compassion." The fourth side, "Knowledge is the preface of peace." My own summary of him is a little different. Willamette has a motto, and I didn't have Latin, so my pronunciation might be a little off, but it's non nobis solum nati sumus, which in English is "not unto ourselves alone are we born." I can't think of a guy who has done more to live out that motto, serving others throughout his career. I'm honored to be part of this resolution, and I urge your vote. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion? Representative Greenlick.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, to the memorial.
The resolution?
The resolution. We all know what an extraordinary man the senator was in terms of his political and other careers, but he had an amazing ability to correct his juniors in a way that could be easily accepted. I had the pleasure of serving with him. He was the founding chair of the board of the Northwest Health Foundation, and I served on that board during that whole period. And some of you that have tried to keep me in line understood that I presented a challenge to the senator in that regard, because Senator Hatfield liked everything in order. He liked things finished in committee. Anybody wanted to be in a committee, it was okay, but he wanted to finish in committee. He didn't like the board meetings to be messy. He liked them to be 15 or 20 minutes long and then adjourned to dinner. Well, that's not exactly my style, as you, I'm sure you understand. There was one issue that I was on the investment committee and I was carrying on about it, and I ended up being in a 1-4 minority vote on the committee, and then I went to the board, and of course I couldn't let it go in committee, so I was carrying on the board, and I ended up being 1-14 on the same issue on the board. So at the break, Senator Hatfield came up to me and he said, "Mitch, you know, it's really great that you're on this board. You know, you raise all these interesting issues, you make the discussion, you know, it's never boring. I mean, you really contribute, but I'm glad there's only one of you." And I got his message very clearly, and admired him all the more for being taken to task in such a gentle way. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion, Representative Bailey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the resolution.
To the resolution.
Colleagues, I was hiking in the Mark Hatfield Wilderness during the weekend in which the good senator passed away, and when I found out what had happened upon my return, I had the overwhelming feeling that we had lost a key note of harmony in the orchestra of this state's history. I knew the senator perhaps in a way that was slightly different from some of the folks in this chamber. I got to know him after his service in the Senate as my professor at Lewis and Clark College, as he taught about the history of the Northwest and of our state. And I didn't just know him as a professor, I knew him as a man who would take an inordinate amount of time in his office to talk to me, to coach me, a young college sophomore, about my career choices and my life decisions. I wasn't important, but I was a person, and I was one of his students, and he took the time to coach, and to listen, and to care. And what I remember most about his class, which included an enormous amount of insight into the inner workings of his political career and into his value set, as the carrier referenced his experiences in the war. But what I remember most was the way in which he taught us to admire the other figures in our region's history, how he took the time to teach about Scoop Jackson, Frank Church, Wayne Morse, and Tom McCall, to make us read their biographies, people with whom he may have not agreed, people with whom he often had difficult negotiations, but people whom he admired and who he felt it was important that all of us understand, to understand his context and his legacy and our legacy. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative. Further discussion, Representative Doherty.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, to the resolution.
To the resolution.
I first met Mark Hatfield when I was 9 years old, and he was at my home. My parents were having a fundraiser for him when he was running for I don't know what. But that we had just moved to Oregon, and it was one of the very first times, and I had no idea who this gentleman was. But all I remember is that there was a very handsome man that came to our house, filled with all of my parents' Republican friends. And it was almost sometimes that I was one of the few people in the room. He was warm. He was charming. Even though he was with many adults, he took time to talk to the kids. Fast forward 10 years, and I was at a prayer peace breakfast when I was a freshman in college. And Mark Hatfield was speaking on his views against the war in Vietnam, which at that time the tide had not turned. And he told of his experience and how he became and why he became a pacifist. And at that point in time, I realized we had one of the greatest statesmen ever out of the state of Oregon, and I became his biggest fan.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion, Representative Bentz.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the resolution.
To the resolution.
Colleagues, many years ago, I was... came over to this part of the country to go to high school, lived with an aunt and uncle. And it happened that I was elected Associated Student Body President, and I received an invitation from then-Governor Hatfield to come here to Salem to enjoy a dinner with the governor and all of the other student body presidents from this area. So I got into the 59 Shiv station wagon and put my corduroy jacket on, my little tie, and I drove to the Chuck Wagon Cafe. I've forgotten what street. And it was an evening, and there we all were around a big table, and the governor came in and gave us a little speech and told us all, you all need to get involved in government, and someday you all need to come back here to this beautiful town and represent your part of the state. And so that's one of the reasons I'm here. He noticed when I got there that I was wearing a tie that my sister had made me. It was back there, those days, you didn't see them very often. It was a tie looking like the Stars and Stripes. And he said, you know, I'd kind of like that tie. And I said, well, I'm sorry, Governor, but I kind of like this tie. And he said, no, I'd like to buy it from you if I could. I go, no, my sister made it for me. You can't have it. And that seemed to be awkward moment, really. But he was the governor. And so some years passed, and it happened I was going to Eastern Oregon, then State College, and the senator came by, and it happened I was student body president again. And again, I had at this point to introduce him, and he noticed my tie. And he said, I know that tie. And I said, yes, you probably do. And he said, I'd still like to buy it. And I said, not for sale. And so I had the great pleasure of making both a governor and a senator upset. But it didn't seem to bother his thoughts about Eastern Oregon. He helped enormously in making our state, our part of the state, better. And I could go into a long discussion about how he did that. But I'll simply say, we're a very fortunate state.
beautiful ocean frontage, beautiful mountains, beautiful deserts. But we are most fortunate to have people, have had people like Senator Hatfield representing us. The state's a better place for it, and we're all better for it. I urge your support of the resolution.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion, Representative Parrish.
Thank you. Well, I definitely feel like I missed out because I never got a chance to meet Senator Hatfield, Governor Hatfield. Seems like he's just about been any for everything in this state. But, you know, sometimes when one person has an impact, it sets off a spiral and a chain of events that you just don't know, you know, years down the road what that looks like. You know, very recently, Senator Hatfield influenced a deployment to Iraq because he signed my husband's appointment letter to West Point. And we were able to lead and bring back, he was able to lead and bring back 3,400 of our soldiers safely with no accident or injury. That event has shaped our family. And so I never got a chance to know him or see him, but that act of having confidence in one person and reaching out to one person and making an impact, I think just sets off a chain. And I know that then, you know, that experience has shaped my husband, it shaped our family, and it shaped the soldiers that he's had a chance to lead down the road and into the future and through two wars. And Mark wouldn't have had that career had Senator Hatfield not taken a chance on him. And so when you think about what we can do as leaders and affect even one person, the spiral and the chain of events that happens down the road in the future has could have amazing outcomes. And so we carry that in our family, that a gratefulness to Senator Hatfield for shaping a long career, successful career in the military that frankly wouldn't have happened had he not taken that risk and that chance on a young David Douglas High School graduate at the time. So, you know, sad that we didn't get a chance to meet him. I didn't get a chance to meet him personally or see him in action. He seems like somebody that I would just adore. So wanted to share that. Thanks.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion, Representative Barker.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the resolution.
To the resolution.
Colleagues, it was briefly mentioned a couple times about the good senator being at Hiroshima as a naval officer right after the bombing some 67 years ago this upcoming August. But this month, 67 years ago, he was driving a landing craft taking Marines from ships to the shore of Iwo Jima. I want to tell a little personal story. My mother-in-law, who was a homemaker, raising eight children and caring for a severely disabled sister, also decorated cakes. And I don't know the story. I couldn't get a hold of my wife to get the nexus of this, but at one point she was asked to bake a cake for Mark Hatfield's birthday. And this was when he was a senator, a new senator. She baked a cake, and if I'd known about this earlier, I would have brought the picture from the Oregonian or the Oregon Journal, whichever one it was in. But she baked a cake, and it had the White House and footsteps leading to the White House for Mark Hatfield to follow. And this was before the 68 election. But even back then, people in Oregon saw him as a potential national leader of the scale of even a shot at being the president. In the late 1990s, I was back in D.C. to talk to the senator about some public safety pension issues, and I reminded him about that my mother-in-law had baked this cake for him, and he remembered the incident and asked me for her current address. And he took the time to send her a very nice personal letter, which she treasured to the end of her days. And that's just the kind of a man he was. And I'm strongly in support of this resolution. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Representative. Further discussion, Representative Frederick.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the resolution.
To the resolution.
Colleagues, you have Senator Hatfield to blame for me being here. So next time you think about that. The fact is that in 1970, Senator Hatfield provided a space for a number of college students to come to during the Vietnam War protests in D.C. And we got a chance to spend some time there. Actually, I guess it was 1970 when we were there. And he was allowing his space in the U.S. Senate chambers or Senate offices as a touchstone for folks who were coming through. And I was one of those folks coming from Earlham College. I had to plug that for the representative from Corvallis. But we managed to go there. As a result of that, I started saying, well, where shall I move to when I get out of college? And I said, well, if a place can produce someone like Mark Hatfield, I want to be there. I got out here and found myself as a reporter, and he took me under his wing one day, as this representative from Southeast Portland mentioned. He decided that he was going to not only answer my questions, but suggest people I should talk with who disagreed with him, which was something that was not usual for most of the folks I was interviewing. And he managed to do that and made a clear impression on me for many years. The other thing I would be remiss if I did not mention is there's a picture right outside this House chamber that is an incredibly important picture. Certainly for the black community, and I think for the rest of Oregon. It's a picture of Senator Hatfield signing a public accommodations bill in the 1950s. It was something he did not have to do. It was something that he was attacked for, but he decided he would do it, and he got it through. I would encourage you to go and take a look at that picture. It was not going to be hanging out there if it had not been the result of several people who were on the former Speaker of the House here and several other people who decided that that picture should be outside this House to show the kind of growth that this state has gone through over the years. But Senator Hatfield's impact on equality in this state cannot be understated. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Gilliam, do you wish to close?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
He does.
I enjoyed all those, and thanks to my colleagues for those stories. Some I'd heard and some I had not. The vote on this resolution coming out of the Senate was unanimous, and I suspect that even though the representative from Clackamas indicated he was a holdout, that we might even get a unanimous vote today. And I appreciate my co-carrier, the representative from Beaverton, mentioning that we're not done honoring this man, and I'm grateful to the Rules Committee of the House for having our first informational hearing about the possibility of a statue honoring Senator Hatfield in Statuary Hall in the U.S. Capitol. So I look forward to working on that. Thank you. Mr. Speaker, I guess I just would close by asking a question, which is, what's behind this type of person with this incredible balance that he possessed? And the answer for me comes in many forms, but this is a guy who saw Oregon, and I hope my friend from Happy Valley listens to this part. He saw Oregon both in square miles of wilderness that needed to be protected and millions of board feet that needed to be cut. This was a guy who was a lover of thousands of books and, as was referenced, a teacher of hundreds of young students and young minds. And as I mentioned, he was the winner of 12 straight elections. But the answer to why the balance in his life, for me, has to be when you think of his personal faith and his belief in the teachings of Jesus. Now, I am not qualified or worthy to convey this part of his life, but I cannot omit it. I knew this would happen once. He didn't poll religious interest groups. He lived by the golden rule, which, as we know, is love others as yourself. There were no judgment holier-than-thou pronouncements from him. He just believed that you do to others as you would have them do to you. So it really was more personal than just the teachings of Jesus. He just seemed to have a very deep forgiveness in his own life that he played out no matter what came his way, no matter what people would do or say about him. He just would not be exhausted in his desire to serve other people because of his love for his God. So I guess this most notable public servant, we always talk about public service, really was a very private servant, if you will. And he quietly prayed for his friends and his enemies every day. I think just like his friend Jesus would do.
Thank you, Representative.
I'm sorry, Mr. Speaker. I know it looked like it, but I wasn't quite done. Mercifully for all of you, I close. Gary Barber is a friend, went to South Salem High, went to Willamette University. He was on the staff of Senator Hatfield. A Hatfield has been, like me. And he's a cancer survivor. And my friend from Beaverton knows this letter appeared after the senator passed away in the Willamette magazine, and I just want to read it quickly for you. At a campaign event in Portland in 89, the senator was anxious to make sure he knew everyone in the room, so he stopped just feet from the doorway. He reached into his breast pocket of his suit coat and said, "Gary, did I ever show this to you?" It was a small note card, like the one senator used to jog their memory. But on this card were handwritten names of people, important people, heads of state, former presidents. And there was my name. He said, "This is my list of all the people I pray for every day." Gary, how long ago was it that you had your cancer? While I choked back tears, he proceeded into the room, greeted everyone by their first name like they were old friends, and they were. All Mark Hatfield staffers were taught this lesson early on. People are more important than issues, no matter their circumstances. I urge that we maybe make our own list. And I urge your aye vote. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Representative. Those of the opinion the resolution should be adopted will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. SCR 202, having received a unanimous majority, is declared adopted. Colleagues, I just want to say it was wonderful to hear the stories we heard. And in my summary, I heard a story of a man of faith, family, and service to and for others. And for that, I'm grateful. I hope the family has an opportunity to see these fine stories repeated so they know the love and sentiment that was sent from this body. SCR 202 is adopted. Representative Brewer, for what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I ask that we momentarily return to courtesies.
Move forward.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I request unanimous consent of the rule that the rules be suspended and former Representative Jim Hill be granted the privileges of the House on the floor.
Representative Brewer requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and that former Representative Jim Hill be granted the privileges of the House and floor. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Welcome, Representative. Messages from the Senate.
Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the President to inform you the Senate has passed Senate Bill 1559, adopted SCR 210, SCR 209, HCR 204, SR 201, concurred in House amendments and repassed Senate Bill 1537.
Chair requests unanimous consent to temporarily return to the order of first readings, memorials, and resolutions. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered.
SCR 209, recognizing and honoring achievements of Terry Jean Frohmeyer. SCR 210, in memoriam, Jeanette Hamby, 1933 to 2012.
Measures read first time are passed to the co-speaker's desk for referral. Yeah. Propositions and motions. First reading of House bills. Second reading of House bills.
House Bill 4003 relating to State Department of Agriculture and Food Safety Fees. House Bill 4023 relating to Guardianships and Juvenile Dependency Proceedings and declaring an emergency. House Bill 4091 relating to Criminal Records Checks and declaring an emergency. House Bill 4173 relating to the printing of official election ballots and declaring an emergency.
Bills read second time are passed to third reading. Third reading of House bills. Clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 4167 relating to offenses and declaring an emergency.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 4167. Representative Nolan.
Mr. Speaker, it is hard to imagine that we could travel further from the uplifting, sublime, and profound conversation we just had than to arrive at this bill. It is trivial in the extreme, but it's important. I encourage your support.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion? Representative Gelser.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Question of the representative from Ashland, please.
Question of the representative from Ashland. Representative Buckley, do you yield?
Yes, Mr. Speaker.
He does?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I got the question to the representative in advance. I've received numerous communications from a local judge about this bill and wondered if you could speak about the September rebalance and the impact on city cash flow.
Thank you, Representative. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, the court fee issue, as you recall, through the bills that were worked through last spring, very complicated. The efforts to try to get some sort of a consistency statewide was the goal of the legislation. It's an ongoing process. There's an interim group that will be continuing to work on this issue. The current court fees have been in effect since January 1st. We don't have the data on really how this is working in terms of the cash flow, particularly between the municipal courts and the justice courts and the state and the counties. So the interim committee will be reviewing the data as it comes in from January 1st through the summer. In the September e-board, we will be reviewing the data they have collected and their recommendations that if we have somehow not arranged the process to be revenue neutral, we will then be able to backfill the dollars to the cities, the municipal courts and the justice courts. It is our full intention for this process to result in a revenue neutral fee system. We are not intending to increase the dollars to the state. We're simply trying to see if it's possible to have consistency statewide. Thank you, Representative. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, good Representative. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Urge an aye vote.
Thank you very much. Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Nolan does not wish to close. Those who are of the opinion the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Springer, how do you vote? Springer votes aye. House Bill 4167, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 4168, relating to courts and declaring an emergency.
Question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 4168. Representative Greg Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, House Bill 4168A. Make some technical changes to the current law implementation of House Bill 2710, which was the civil fee measure passed by the 2011 legislature. The measure has an emergency clause in effect and is effective on passage. The measure makes some technical changes to clarify fee amounts, reestablishes the exemption for the court charging public bodies a copy fee, and codifies recent fees established by Chief Justice order. Your Joint Committee on Ways and Means recommends approval of House Bill 416A as amended.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Smith does not wish to close. Those who are of the opinion the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Parrish, how do you vote? Parrish votes aye. Representative Holvey, how do you vote? Holvey votes aye. Representative Jensen, how do you vote? Jensen votes aye. Representative Esquivel, how do you vote? Esquivel votes aye. House Bill 4168, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 4169, relating to offenses and declaring an emergency.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of HB 4169A. Representative Nolan.
Mr. Speaker, I erred last time. This one is even further. Colleagues, at the end of the 2011 session, we passed four bills. At the very end of the session, that ended up having some conflicts among them. This bill simply clarifies the original intent and removes those conflicts.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Nolan, do you wish to close? She does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. House Bill 4169A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 4170, relating to dog training and prescribing an effective date.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of 4170A. Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker and colleagues. House Bill 4170 comes to you from the House Committee on Rules, where it received unanimous support. This bill is, I call it the EFU doggy bill. And it's actually kind of had over a year's worth of journey, because it ended last year in Rules, and before that it was in another committee, and eventually died there, but we ended up carrying it and working on it. And a lot of folks were involved during the interim to get to where it's at today. But some of those folks, I greatly appreciate Patty Strand from the Clackamas County area. She's up here above us with some of her friends also. And also appreciate some of the leadership from Clackamas County as well being involved in this, as well as Sean Cleve from the Farm Bureau. House Bill 4170, also known as the Dog Training and Agility Bill, clarifies the definition of farm use to include dogs training and testing activities in designated exclusive farm use EFU areas. The practicing of dog training and testing activities have been ongoing throughout Oregon, but in recent years have been stopped due to the lack of clarity in the current land use statutes. As a result,
Oregonians are losing these activities, which include writing lessons and schooling shows. The loss of these activities are not because of any specific legislative intent, but due to a maze of complex and evolving Oregon land use laws, which make county administrators feel constrained from approving activities that are not specifically allowed in the law. By adding these activities and clarifying other provisions in the EFU statute, House Bill 4170 ensures that these activities continue and that they are treated uniformly in such a way that actually preserves farmland while supporting the intent of EFU. Thank you.
Co-carrier Representative Holvey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I rise just to make a few more points and really appreciate the work and diligence of the representative from Albany in following this issue along its trail. It did originate in general government and consumer protection, which we weren't able to get this finished last session, so, and ended up in rules. So I really appreciate the former chair of rules and the current co-chairs of rules for seeing this through, because it's an important bill. We found that, unfortunately, dogs were without a home in our land use system. So I wanted to make a couple of points about this bill. More just specifically about what we did to this bill. There was some I would say, obsolete references to greyhound training and breeding in our statutes under farm use. And because those existed there, it did create some lack of clarity for whether other breeds of dogs were allowed. And so it was important to remove that reference specifically to greyhounds in that portion of the statute and also in a special tax assessment area. And just to make sure that everyone's clear, by removing those references, we're relying on the definition under farm use of animal husbandry, which the Court of Appeals has included dogs in that definition. So I wanted to make sure that was perfectly clear and on the record. An important piece, element of this bill. There was a couple others that the good representative from Albany mentioned as well in looking at dogs' activities and training as an allowed use on farmlands under 215, 213, and 283. But it talks about dog training classes and testing trials which may be conducted in pre-existing farm buildings, and the intent of that was to make sure that we weren't building new buildings for dog trainings, that they were being held in pre-existing farm buildings, but does not mean that they can't have dog activities outside as well. Wanted to clarify that dog training classes and testing trials is an allowed use. It's just that when they're in buildings, they need to be in pre-existing farm buildings. The bill goes on to say that we can have 10 dogs per training class, and the number of training classes cannot exceed 6 per day. The dogs participating in testing trials does not exceed 60, and the testing trials to be conducted on site is limited to 4 or fewer trials per calendar year. There's also a section later in the bill that addresses the rulings sometimes made by the Department of under LUBA concerning high-value farmland, and we wanted to make it perfectly clear that these activities are allowed on high-value farmlands. Almost the entire Willamette Valley is high-value farmland, and under current rules, the counties were troubled that any time there was a high-value farmland in place under DLCD rules, that dogs wouldn't be allowed on those lands. So we tried to take care of that in statute in the law. And we also have the ability to have commercial boarding kennels as a conditional use on farmlands as well. I think that I pretty much covered some of the specifics that I wanted to get on the record. and I appreciate your diligence and from the whole dog community, the AKC, many people and organizations came forward to help and support this bill, and I urge your aye vote. Thank you very much.
Further discussion? Representative Boone.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, this bill came before a committee I was on last session, and I supported it then and was disappointed to see it go down, but I'm very happy to see it jump up again before us, and I rise in support of this. On a little less techie and less wonky approach, my grand dog is going to be one of these dogs as soon as she finishes her obligatory obedience training. And if you saw last session the dogs on the lawn outside the Capitol, it was on a nice sunny day, they were just having a blast. And I would ask for permission to show something, but I don't need to do that. If you want to see a great dog, she's not mine. She's one of Representative from the Midcoast area's dogs. Another, a beautiful golden Labrador. These dogs have the time of their lives, and their owners too. I think it's a great thing we can do. I'm hoping that I represent the Upper Left Coast. Maybe some of your colleagues in that area can start these activities there too if they're not already happening. And I will be happy to drive my grand dog and any other dog who wants to go have a great time with agility training. And it's just a great activity. It's a great thing we can do. It's a great use of our land. And I hope you will all join me in voting yes.
Further discussion? Representative Hunt.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Thank you, colleagues. This is a bill that's had extensive conversation in three committees now between the last session and this. And it looks like a long bill, but it really is, as the co-carriers have said, a very narrowly targeted bill. And I think it's important to remember when we look at a bill like this that it's a good reminder that we need to be open when there are land use changes, which always look very controversial, that we need to be open to very modest focus fixes to our land use system that will actually allow, in this case, not so much new businesses and jobs to pop up, but it's really about protecting some existing businesses that I know are very prevalent in Clackamas County and through a lot of our state that are focused on the training and agility of these dogs. This is going to keep them actually being able to function. It's not going to negatively impact prime farmland, and I urge your support.
Further discussion, Representative Kennemer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, it's an interesting and long journey for this pretty simple bill. I remember as a county commissioner how disappointing it was that a simple solution didn't seem feasible. I'm delighted today to see the letter from all five of our current Clackamas County commissioners in support of the bill, and my thanks to the many people who have made sure that it got here. I urge an aye vote.
Further discussion? Representative Clem.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I rise in support of the bill.
To the bill.
To the bill. And I particularly want to thank the representative from Albany for working on this. As anybody who was paying close attention knows, I was the one who killed the bill for unrelated matters. Though the bill has changed actually quite a lot from that time. So in some respects, I'm pleased that the work was done to change the bill. The original bill, I probably would not have voted for by the time it came to the floor. And so the citizens who came down here learned a lot about the ugly side of sausage making. They also learned how to compromise and make deals. And this bill is significantly better. Of course, I always think all bills related to farmland should go through the Ag Committee, but in this time I need to thank the representative from Albany for taking it in the Rules Committee and working out an agreement, because it really is a good piece of legislation. The goal, obviously, for those of us who care about the land use system, is to not displace farmland. This is a good solution to not have food production displaced by another form of activity, but instead figure out how they can work in harmony. The dogs, as my beloved OG, who's no longer with us, knows, they do belong on farms, they have a place on farms, and they don't interfere with farm production. So I urge your aye support.
Further discussion? Representative Wingard.
Thank you, Speaker Wan. Colleagues, just real quickly.
To the bill.
I know time is short. To the bill. I just want everybody to take note of why this bill is before us today. A property owner in Oregon wanted to run a dog agility business on her property, and the land use laws in this state prevented her from doing that. So she had to come down to the state legislature, she had to go to her state capitol and ask for permission. Please, can I run a dog agility business on my own land? How did we get here, colleagues? Please vote aye on the bill.
Representative Olson, do you wish to close? No. Olson does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Nolan, how do you vote? Nolan votes aye. Representative Matthews votes aye. HB 4170A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Final reading, memorials and resolutions. Chair requests unanimous consent that consideration of SCR 205 be made a special order of business immediately following the order of business of special committee reports on Monday, February 27, 2012 calendar. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Bills, reports, and other business lying on the table. First reading of Senate bills.
Senate Bill 1559 relating to 911 emergency communications and prescribing an effective date.
Bill read first time or referred to co-speakers for a referral. Second reading of Senate bills.
Senate Bill 1512 related to lighting that contains burglary. Senate Bill 1518 related to public contracting by state contracting agencies and declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 1527 relating to crime and declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 1528 relating to liquor enforcement inspectors and declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 1548 relating to advertisements for job vacancies and declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 1555 related to hostile education environments and prescribing an effective date. Senate Bill 1556 related to contract preferences for federally funded transit projects and declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 1558 related to economic development revenue bonds and declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 1563 relating to members of the Uniformed Services and declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 1566 relating to seismic information about schools and prescribing an effective date.
Bills read second time or passed to third reading. Third reading of Senate bills. Clerk will read the bill.
Senate Bill 1546 relating to trees.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of SB 1546A. Representative Widener.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, today, I bring a bill to you that's about safety, highway safety. This bill essentially allows the Department of Transportation, ODOT, to remove dangerous trees next to our highways. It predominantly is looking at our coastal highways, where we have high winds, where we've logged timber. We still have trees up in the right-of-way next to the road that will blow over when we have windstorms and leave people isolated from being able to get to an emergency services if they need to go to the hospital or if someone gets sick or anything like that, or maybe a heart attack. With trees across the road in the wintertime, they cannot get there. Sometimes people are laid up for long amounts of time, but this bill is about safety. That's the primary goal. And it allows ODOT to remove dangerous trees. Unfortunately, after listening to the governor's speech yesterday, he doesn't want to cut trees in Oregon, so I don't even know if he's going to allow ODOT to cut these trees or remove these dangerous trees. But I urge an aye vote from everybody for safety reasons that we remove the trees next to the road. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Boone.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My gosh. To the bill.
To the bill.
Three times today. I rise and urge an I vote on this. This bill came to me some time ago from one of my four sheriffs, and in response to just what the representative from McMinnville just stated. Another aspect of this, if you've ever driven over coastal roads or in the countryside where elk run rampant and deer, this will help clear the viewshed for you while you're driving 60 miles an hour down the road. And when these animals are standing on the side of the road, at least you'll see them before they jump out. So in one of the things that we did in order to get to this problem was we allowed the logging that was just beyond this to go on, but they were required to leave a buffer zone of maybe one or two rows of trees, and this is why this became a problem. So this is a good bill. It is a safety bill, and I hope that you'll join me in allowing this to go forward in a positive manner. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Nathanson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
There was one issue that arose during our deliberations and hearing, and that was the potential impact on local jurisdictions that have tree ordinances. There was some discussion about, did this mean that ODOT might get overzealous and start cutting trees that cities wanted to save and so forth. That really is not the intent of what's to be accomplished with this bill. Nevertheless, we did have some discussion. There were assurances about the purpose of the bill and an understanding that local ordinances would be absolutely respected, and that, for example, where local ordinances require replacing trees that have been removed, that certainly trees would be replaced and any other requirements of the local jurisdiction would be met. I was very pleased with the discussion, and I'm going to support this bill also. I think it's essential for public safety. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Freeman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, I appreciate the efforts on this bill and the safety aspect in which it is intended to address. It is my sense that this bill will pass today. It did pass the Senate, and it will become law. I will be voting no today, however, to send a very clear message to those that will be making the decision to enter private property that they do not abuse this privilege that we are giving them. I am very concerned anytime we give away private property rights for any reason, including safety. I do appreciate the efforts. I'm hoping that the people that will get to go cut these trees down use very good judgment in entering people's private property. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Schaffler.
Thank you, the bill.
To the bill.
Imagine that, a bill coming off this floor that is actually going to allow cutting down of some trees and timber in the state of Oregon. I swear to God, I never thought I'd live to see the day. Once again, it's not enough, but it's a start, and it's for public safety as well. And if we thin some forests, Mr. Speaker, beyond these buffers, that would also be a public safety action too, because we stop incredible forest fires from emitting millions and gazillions of tons of carbon into the air, polluting our wonderful earth. Good bill should pass. Urge I vote.
Representative Widener, do you wish to close?
Briefly, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I just want to make one thing clear. Permits the department to inspect and condemn trees that potentially pose immediate or substantial risk of damage or injury by obstructing, hanging over, or otherwise encroaching or threatening to encroach in a manner of the state highway. Colleagues, this is a small bill. They have to get permission, or they will be contacting landowners, working with them. It's for trees that are right up on the highway that are looking at falling. I would appreciate it if ODOT maybe did take it to state roads that run through our forest and maybe do a clear cut path to clear the trees back from the roads, maybe 500 feet, and we could put some timber in our mills and start raising money and revenue for our schools to fund them. But I don't think they're going to be able to stretch it that far and just take care of the roads that are encroaching on our state highways at this point. Thank you. I urge an aye vote.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Wingard, how do you vote? Wingard votes aye. Representative Bailey, how do you vote?
Aye.
Bailey votes aye. Senate Bill 1546A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 1561, relating to the Oregon Military Department and prescribing an effective date.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 1561. Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, Senate Bill 1561 passed the House Veterans Affairs Committee 6-0, passed the Senate floor 29-1. It will allow Oregon to develop a work group in the interim to facilitate the development of a larger, more inclusive emergency preparedness plan and operations for the state of Oregon. I encourage an aye vote.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Huffman, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Co-Speaker Roblin, how do you vote? Co-Speaker votes aye. Representative Garrett, how do you vote? Representative Garrett votes aye. SB 1561, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Other business of the House? Oh, gavel. Other business of the Senate? Orders of the day have been completed. Announcements. Representative Wisnant.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Honorable colleagues, please look on your desk at the Governor's Proclamation today. This honors the NACI Veterans Day, or proclaims Sunday, February the 26th, to be the NACI Veterans Day in Oregon. I'm honored to bring to you today this announcement as a member of the Oregon Commission on Asian and Pacific Islander Affairs. The NACIs are second-generation Japanese Americans. And on November the 2nd, 2011, the 100th Battalion, 442nd Regimental Combat Team, and the Military Intelligence Service were honored with the Congressional Gold Medal. These gentlemen volunteered for combat during World War II to help this nation, their nation, win the war and to prove their loyalty while their families were incarcerated in concentration camps at home. Despite this, the storied units of the 100th Battalion, 442nd RCT, and MIS never hesitated to answer the call to duty to defend our country during World War II. 21 members of the 100th Battalion, Infantry Battalion, were awarded the Medal of Honor. There's a film that features the lives and wartime heroes called Go for Broke, which became a famous World War II slogan. This Sunday, the Oregon Nike Endowment and Oregon NACI veterans are holding a tribute luncheon at the Monoma Athletic Club to celebrate the bestowing of the Congressional Gold Medal, the highest civilian honor the federal government can present to the surviving veterans and their families. Please read the document on your desk. And there's information if you're interested in attending this event. These are great Americans. Thank you.
Further announcements, Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We announced the sub on Ways and Means Natural Resources. We'll still meet at 1 o'clock as scheduled.
Further announcements, Representative Kotek. Further announcements, Representative Kotek.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, House Democrats, we are caucusing. Grab your lunch and come to the caucus room as soon as you can. Thank you.
Further announcements? Remonstrances. Representative Witt.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, we have mere days before the end of this legislative session, and we have still taken no action to help 1 in 4 Oregonians who are underwater on their homes and at risk of foreclosure. We've done nothing to keep people in their homes, and we've done nothing to hold banks accountable for the ravages of the housing crisis. We have a package of reform bills that passed the Senate with broad bipartisan support, and that package is ready for passage now. The reality is that in the next few days, we need to pass the package of foreclosure reforms that the Senate sent us, and we need to pass them without watering them down, without taking steps backward on existing laws, and without kowtowing to the big banks. We should be holding the big banks' feet to the fire to deal fairly with homeowners, not inviting them to use the foreclosure reform bills as a vehicle to codify their own wish lists. We must pass a package of protections. The package, in my opinion, absolutely must include an end to this practice of dual foreclosures that serve as a financial industry sleight of hand. While homeowners are looking at the bank's proposals for modifications of terms, the institutions are sneaking in and serving notice of foreclosure. Any attempts to water down legislation to ban that practice is unacceptable. Whatever we introduce can't create more webs of paperwork and buck passing than the current system has. Anything that creates more middlemen or layers that at-risk homeowners must navigate needs to be shut down right away. Colleagues, the bills that the Senate passed and sent to us already represent a compromise over the package that was killed in this House. Let's stop the delays and give Oregon homeowners something that they can count on to keep them in their homes.
Further remonstrance, Representative Wingert.
Thank you, colleagues. On the issue of land use, which came up today on that bill, which came out of House Rules, I received a response by email after testimony in that committee. A letter from an attorney, Eric Postma, who saw some of my comments, which were similar to what I said on the floor today, about the dog agility business of Deborah Berkley's that had been shut down. And he wrote me, and I'm going to keep this somewhat anonymous, "Your response hit home for me because of a case I argued to the Oregon Supreme Court a few years ago. In that case, my clients wanted to open a used car lot in a city in Oregon. By state statute, before opening a used car lot, you need the relevant local jurisdiction to certify on a prepared DMV form that the proposed property is properly zoned for a used car lot. My clients went to the city, were told that the property was properly zoned for a used car lot, and had the city officials sign the proper form certifying the property was properly zoned for a used car lot. My clients then spent significant money preparing the property and buying cars to open for a business. Weeks after opening for business, the city visited my clients, telling them the property is not zoned for a car lot, and shut them down. My client lost a lot of money they did not have much of. My lawsuit was against the city for negligently presenting to my clients that the property was properly zoned for a car lot when it was not. My clients did not prevail, and I was the appellate attorney who took the matter to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court eventually ruled that city, county, and state employees have no special relationship to the citizen who receives a zoning determination from local officials, and because of that, the city could not be held liable for mistakenly telling my clients and certifying in a state form that the property was zoned for a car lot when, in fact, it was not. So you cannot hold the very entity that makes zoning determinations liable for giving you mistaken zoning information. That is the state of things in Oregon. Thank you, Colin.
Further remonstrances, Representative Dembrough.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, you all know how underfunded our community colleges are, especially now that enrollment is just soaring in the colleges, and yet funding is not keeping pace with it. What you may not realize is that the way that the colleges have handled this increase in growth, in demand, is to put more students into the regular general education courses, to the remedial courses, the basic skills courses. Very few are getting into career technical education courses. And why is that? The reason is because those programs are severely limited by their infrastructure limitations. There just is not the space, there are not the facilities, there is not the equipment to be able to give these students access, even when they're qualified for the programs, access to the programs they need. Colleagues, you may not realize that community college students who enter career technical programs graduate at a nearly 100% rate. And then in nearly every case, they go on to good family wage jobs. But we have students who are waiting and waiting, and ultimately they are dropping out because they can't get into those programs. We need to be expanding our infrastructure in our community colleges. You go talk to your local college, and they'll tell you that I'm telling you the truth. We have a bill, colleagues, that's languishing in Ways and Means. It's House Bill 4028. It's the bill that was part of yesterday's minority report. It is a good bill. It is an important bill. We have people who are waiting for the training that they need. They're waiting to get into these programs that they need. Whether it's Astoria, Clatsop Community College with its welding program, whether it's Rogue Community College with its tele courses, its distance learning infrastructure that it's trying to get going, whether it's Treasure Valley out in Ontario for its agriculture and physical therapy, occupational therapy programs, whether it's Portland for the trade center that needs to be built on Swan Island. It needs this bill to pass to get that done. So this is a bill that not only will create construction jobs right away, but it will create a pathway, a pipeline for students that badly need it, that will create jobs right away. We'll have workers whose minimum wage job earnings will become living wage job earnings. Let's get this bill going. Thank you, colleagues.
Further remonstrances, Representative Lindsay.
Colleagues, it was just a few years ago that my sister and my brother-in-law were living in a pretty nice home. They also started a new business. They left their previous employee with a nice salary, and they started up a business, took the risk, rolled the dice, and it didn't turn out. The business went down, and because of that, they also lost their home. Now, what's interesting is that they were not kicked out of their home immediately. Those that refer to big evil banks, what happened was that those big evil banks worked with my sister and brother-in-law for a good 18 months, mediating with them, extending a hand, working to help them to extend payments, to help them try to find employment so that they can meet their payment obligations. For 18 months, they lived in that home mortgage-free while the bank worked with them closely to help them out. And in the end, things wound down. They were not able to save their house, but the bank helped them, literally helped them move out of their home into another place and helped them all along the way. This is one piece of evidence that the number one reason for foreclosure is, guess what? The number one reason for foreclosure is, guess what? Losing a job. And guess what? What's the number one solution to foreclosure? Get ready, it's going to blow your mind. Getting a job. That's the number one solution to foreclosures in Oregon is jobs. And we got jobs bills that are sitting around, and there's gamesmanship, and there are people holding some jobs bill packages as hostage, and we need to release them. If you want to solve foreclosure in Oregon, you solve it by getting people jobs and by releasing some of these jobs bills. Let's quit the gamesmanship. Let's get jobs on. People need jobs. Thank you.
Further remonstrances? Seeing none. Adjournment. Representative Roblin. 10:30 a.m. Monday, February 27, 2012.
Mr. Speaker, I move the House adjourn until 10:30 a.m. on Monday, February 27, 2012.
Representative Roblin moves the House adjourn until 10:30 a.m. Monday, February 27, 2012. Without objection, the House is adjourned.